You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is Tall Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Robbie O'Neill, John Gibbons, and Mike Bankhall to go through, well, what the manager said today, the way the Liverpoolian week has been, and look ahead to the game that is coming up against Southampton, all that is to come, plus Dave Hewitson on curating a new exhibition at the Walker Art Gallery called Art of the Terraces, and Auguste Malenga on his new series of kids' football books called Never Give Up. They sound good, by the way. Did you do that one?
Yeah, I did. I've done Augustine twice now.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. He's a children's author, an acclaimed African children's author who basically dabbled in footy and really enjoyed it, and so has now done more.
Excellent. Are these books good?
They look good, yeah. I've already seen the covers. I don't know what they say, never judge a book by a cover, but I think that's nonsense.
Yeah.
Because these covers are great.
There we are.
And that's the main reason he's on.
Excellent stuff. there's some judgment there by the cover, it is fair to say. Never book a guest by the cover. Quite the opposite,
yeah.
As it transpires. We've got to work through everything. The manager talked a lot in the press conference. We'll be bringing that up as well and going all the way through. Someone's already put a comment. Eager. Will you be doing World Cup content? A teeny little bit, Omar. I mean, it is happening, so we are going to mention it here and there, but we're not going to be like doing a day-to-day is what's to come in the World Cup, not least because by the time we recorded that and then put it out, the games will have started, four games a day relentlessly through the World Cup. But anyway, some World Cup comes up all the way through in the manager's press conference, Mike. Almost to the point that I think he was almost a bit vexed by it, to be quite honest with you. You get the impression he's a bit like, listen, we've got a game tomorrow. Stop asking me about all this stuff because the game is much more important than this.
Yeah, I think the manager really is just focused on this next game. And I think for us, we spoke just off air a bit about how important it is to win this game and go into the World Cup with that positive feeling. And I think the manager is just intensely focused on this next game. I think it was important he gave it the kind of like the big one after the Tottenham game because he realised how big that was for us.
Yeah.
And how important that was for us. It was a massive win. I think we were able to maintain the momentum given the result against Derby. The young players play their part. They have a good night. Everyone kind of comes out of it like looking good, to be honest. And now it's just about getting this win against Southampton. If you get this win against Southampton, you can now say to the club, after the World Cup, it's top four and Champions League. Go on a good run in the Champions League. And the Cups, who knows what happens? If we knock out Man City in the Carabao Cup, it opens up completely for us because it's literally us, possibly United there, and the rest of the teams that we should fancy a chance against. So I think it's a really important game, and the manager's kind of tone and his... I mean, the manager never hides when he's disgusted by a question. He wears his heart on his sleeve. You know,
Carl Markham's had a rough few weeks. He's had a rough few weeks, Carl Markham's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so when he's disgusted by a question, you know it. You know you've asked him a bad question. You feel bad for asking a bad question. So there were lots of bad questions, and the manager didn't hide his disgust at all.
He didn't, Robbie. The World Cup thing is, it is a live, present thing. It is going to be something that all the managers will be asked about, every single one of them. You know, it's there, it's weird. It's worth pointing that out as well. And that's one of the reasons why they will all be asked about it. It is weird. But he was quite clear, he sort of hasn't got a low going in comparative to some top six rivals. And what I sort of got the sense of was he felt, Robbie, like he wants this bit that comes next. He's already looking forward to it. They're asking about the World Cup, and I thought he was on the verge of saying, you want to see some of our training plans, to be honest with you, lads, because I've got a big one planned here. I'm really looking forward to what I'm doing. And that appears to... I just sort of feel like maybe for 2 or 3 weeks, he's been finding all this as something to get through until he gets the bit he wants, which is this period with his players.
He reminds me like of a dad who really can't wait to get Christmas out the way. someone said to him before, who's your favourite? Who's your fancy? He's like, yeah. It was like so not asked, and I think what's going to be interesting for him is that he's probably looking at the dressing room. You can probably sense the tension in the players as well, because they're all going to be like worrying, like, if I pick a knock up, I'm missing out on what could be my only chance to play in a World Cup. You know, they come around every 4 years, and there's a lot of anxiety attached to international tournaments to professional footballers. And you know, when you're an elite manager, you're going to be inherently aware of that, and when your team hasn't been performing, you know, as well as everyone would have expected, it's the last thing you need, really. I think by the same token, I imagine he'll have a totally different attitude amongst those players to what he would in his press.
Very much so.
And through the press, but he doesn't have to appease the press. He can treat them how he wants, because they need him. He doesn't need them, whereas he needs those players. So it's a case of, I think for him, it's just like, get through this week. I think he actually mentioned something about the Derby game, and the fact that the World Cup's looming actually affected the team that he chose. I might have misheard that, but from what I was skipping through what he read, I'm sure I've seen him say that. I thought that was quite interesting, and I do wonder, like with Southampton at the weekend, it'll just be a case of get out there, win, and hopefully, you know. I mean, by the way, I think you'll definitely see 5 substitutions on Saturday without a shadow of a doubt. I don't think it'll just be a case of like one sub on 70. I think you'll probably see the entire team also at a different point.
And that's fair, John. I think just on this, firstly, they've had a couple of sort of shimmies towards it, but we've never actually had a proper winter break in this country, really. Certainly not an extended one. There was that mad one where some teams didn't play one weekend and others didn't play another a couple of years ago. They had to go at. This is that. And it feels to me like he's really, you know, he keeps referring to it all the way through his press conferences pre-season. It really feels a little bit to me like he's got a really strong sense that on Saturday and what's just gone and what is to come, that there is a really clear sort of end of something and start of something else for him and for them. And I think that's in part because of how it's gone. Trust me, I suspect Mikel Arteta's not throwing shapes like that. I'm sure he is. Everything just continues as it has been because everything's wonderful. Whereas it feels to me like it's almost really psychologically important to him to go, there's this thing, it finishes on Saturday. Then there's this other thing that I'm completely in control of. And then there's what comes next.
Yeah, I think they'll be looking forward to it. I think they'll be really looking forward to the time, and it looks like they've got a good availability of players. So there's 7 lads going to the World Cup, which for an elite football club is fairly low. But also it's these lads who are coming back. Like he talked about Diaz back running. You know, he talked about Matip being out there again. You know, Keita back available. There's 1 or 2 others he mentioned. Milner, but that was just a concussion, wasn't it? But he was mentioning them like we had a game next week. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That they were ready for. But I think it is, Ed, there's something, you know, nearly as important as that was this stretch. So he's going to have, when they fly out to Dubai, I think they're getting 3 weeks off, I think. And then they go out. And then, you know, he's going to be flying out there with a really good pool of players. And then anyone who gets knocked out the World Cup, you know, go straight out. That's why they've gone to Dubai. It's not an ownership thing. Well, it might be a little bit of that, who knows. But, you know, but no, jokes aside, it's so they can just topple over from Qatar and sort of join. And so by the time they start, you know, half of them might be out. Do you know what I mean? And so sort of going over. And so he's got a really good group of players to work with. You know, he's already talked about the fact that, you know, he's going to be going stronger against Man City because, you know, the space allows him to, and I think they're gonna fly into that game, and it's gonna be interesting to see how this break affects teams. And I think the last few years when we've had stuff riding on it, with the exception of the of of the year we had our own winter break and just lost every week in January. they've sort of limped towards the end, haven't they? And you've always felt like, oh, you know, the, you know, last season it felt like, you know, we were still winning, but we were just sort of like sort of getting there. And I wouldn't be surprised if we finished the season really strongly, because of the, not just because we need to, let's face it, but you know, in terms of performances and in terms of, you know, what we see on the pitch because of this.
When you, John, when you mentioned the, you know, the what this break sort of means, what, one of the things that struck me in his press conference was he was very on. I often feel the manager's a very clever man, and I think he often acts like he's not on top of certain events because he really doesn't want to be talking about them. He doesn't want to hang out there the idea that Mike Hughes is about to ask him about the thing he's just mentioned. So I'd rather just not mention it and or act like it. What do you mean by that? I loved how on top of the fact that he knew we were playing Villa on Boxing Day. Like, it was like I've got this list of things that's going on here, and one of the things that's going on is we're playing Villa on Boxing Day. So what are Villa going to be doing? How many have they got going to the World Cup? And I think it's dead interesting because a lot of the time he acts like stuff that's happening next week, well, it might as well be in a different solar system. And then today it was very much, yeah, it's Villa on Boxing Day, isn't it? And we're winning that one, which is a mad way to sort of think about it, but it's there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, I loved Robbie's Christmas analogy. Villa for him is like going the tip. You just fucking can't wait. Do you know what I mean? He's just like, that's what he's in Christmas for. He's like, I'm doing a big trip to the tip on the 3rd of Jan, and I can't fucking wait. Well, this is his Boxing Day. Do you know what I mean? He's like, he's really, really up for it. And yeah, we'll wait and see. But I think, you know, for us, you know, we should be in a good position coming out of it, both in terms of the players that are available, players are coming back, and the ones who are going away.
He's very cool on the, when I say cool, I mean relaxed around the ownership question, Mike. Not for the first time this week, he seems to be completely at peace. He's got, whether some people like it or not, what appears to be a very strong relationship with the ownership, and I suspect with the man he directly deals with, in Mike Gordon, it feels like a strong relationship, and he just seems to, you know, as far as he's concerned, it is just business as usual in every single sense. He's not getting drawn into any nonsense on it whatsoever. I think because that's what he thinks of the situation. Maybe that's what he's been told. Maybe he just accepts what he's been told. But he seems to be really, really just sort of straight down the line with it in a way that I'm not quite surprised by. But I'm not quite sure what I expected of him. But he certainly doesn't seem in the dark about anything.
I think this is the exact response I expected from the manager. Like, I think where the manager is at the moment, he seems to me really intensely focused. I mean, he's a very intense and lovable man, but he seems incredibly intense at this moment in time. And I think given where we are as a club, given where, you know, the form is, I'm sure he strikes me as someone who'd be quite hard on himself sometimes. And he's probably thinking of just how he can get Liverpool back on the road to where they're winning 4, 5, 6 games in a row. So I just honestly think he's made it clear after the Derby game, he made it clear that he said, look, whatever happens with the ownership, I'm going to be here and I'm going to sit on my contract. That's the bottom line for him. I don't think he wants to field any questions unless anything's going to happen in terms of like imminent ownership news happening or something. I just think he just thinks, this is all noise. I'm here. I just want to focus on getting 3 points. Like, it is very much the cliche of the next game is most important. Like, he literally just cares. He cares more about Savanta more than anything in his life, I imagine. He's literally been watching all the footage of Southampton. Like, that's all he cares about right now. So he, like, all the ownership stuff, all the stuff about the World Cup, I think he just found that I thought in the press conference he found that stuff like beyond mildly irritating. I think he was I wouldn't be surprised if he just stormed out after a few of the questions. If I was like, he just wasn't asked for it. He just didn't want to feel those questions. So yeah, I think that's where the manager is.
It's going to drag along. I think he'll probably be relieved that he's not going to do another press conference when anyone asks him about it for at least 3 weeks, John. Maybe when he first gets to Dubai, there might be something that they do. But I think I just don't think he sees it necessarily this much as his business from what he's been told so far. And I think he accepts and trusts what he's been told so far, if that makes sense.
There's a few things at play. And one of them is what you've just said, that, you know, is it going to help him win that game on Boxing Day? No, so not bothered. I know loads of things that he thinks he's going to be able to do between now and Christmas, you know, on these training camp in terms of wrestling that's going to help him. That is this going to affect that? It's not. You know, he was asked about sort of January, and, you know, it is business as usual. It's funny because, like, people have been moaning a lot about the owners not putting the money in, but one of the positives of it was like, well, we'll sign someone in January or we won't, because they don't put any of the money in anyway. And so it's one of those things where it is now business as normal. If we were being bankrolled by someone and then they were looking to sell, you would worry, wouldn't you? You'd be worried about, well, what's going to, he's not going to put any money in between now and then. So we're going to be sort
of... But the idea of the club's self-sufficient anyway, what difference does it make?
Yeah, whether it's £40 million on the pitch or in the bank, you know, it's just an asset, you know, if you're selling. And so it doesn't really matter. So I think he's rightly looking at it and going, well, this doesn't affect me until maybe something drastic happens, and then it will, and I'll worry about it then. And I think it's the right approach for all of us, to be honest with you. We don't know what is going to happen, and we can speculate and we can look at it, but at the end of the day, we don't know how much they want to sell. We don't know who's going to come in for that, you know, if they sort of do. So in the meantime, let's just twat Southampton and crack on from there.
Let's do that. Other thing he's asked about, Robbie, is... which, you know, and he talked about at length, actually, and I think it was the question that he most wanted to sort of get stuck into was the goalkeeper, Callagher. He seems to me, he's at pains to stress two things. One, I think this lad is really good at being a goalkeeper, but two, he needs to be at the club that gets the most out of him, and that's this one. And I will do the thing where I go, well, maybe you want to get first team football somewhere, but the manager's opinion appears to really be, but here, he gets to showcase all of his talent, his ability in distribution. Everything else is about the fact that he's great when he's called in on moments. It's not the idea that he's making 10 saves a game, but when you need him, he's there. And, you know, the manager, on off the back of that Derby performance, the fact that Keller even gets the League Cup final last year, everyone's vindicated by that in the short term. I think there's more games for Keller in the post, I think it's worth saying. And he couldn't have more respect or admiration from his manager.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting in a way, like, the Kelleher project, if you like. I suppose the structure around him is an incestum one. You've got one of the best goalkeepers in the world and you're understudy to him. You've got a World Cup winning goalkeeper as a coach. You're going to be training with them on a day in, day out. Now, for instance, Kelleher could go to, you know, a mid-table Premier League side, or he could go to a top of the table Championship side and he could be number one. But the coaching he's getting might be shite. And I think with goalkeeping in particular, coaching's such an important aspect of it. You've got another coach who understands you and who can tell you about the nuances of the position. And that's why when the more experienced goalkeepers tend to be the better ones. And it's because they're at a point where they've had so much coaching that their in-game decision-making is just so on point. Now, to have the mentorship, if you like, that he's got around him at this moment in his career, it is invaluable for him in many ways. Now, obviously, getting minutes on the pitch is one thing, and I think most goalkeepers would tell you, I want to be playing. But there's a reason he's still there. And I think there's not a doubt in my mind that Kelleher can see the benefits of the situation he's in at Liverpool. I think the other thing is, you talked about when he does get those opportunities, the opportunities he's getting, they're so kind of they require such a degree of concentration that it's to use a theatre analogy, it's like going on as understudy for Hamlet at the National. and just really nailing it, but knowing you've got no choice but to nail it. And in a way, you're not going to fail anyway. Because everyone knows you're number two, but you're just getting this level of coaching that is just, it's beyond parallel. So he's obviously a great presence to have around the club. The manager thinks a lot of him. And I think the only issue for him now is how it affects his national team standing. And I suppose it's just a case of how kind of important that is to him. We spoke earlier about players wanting to play at our kind of international tournaments, but, you know, how far the Republic of Ireland at this moment in time from playing at a European Championship or a World Cup and stuff like that. I suppose he's probably weighing all of that up, although I'm sure he's proud to play for his country, because you would be. But I think there's so many factors at play with the kid that I feel like Klopp's just he's got to kind of sing his praises as much as possible, because he is so good, and he's, you know, it's a massive benefit to the club and to him that he's around that.
Just to jump in on Kelleher, I think Robbie makes some really good points there. And you know, people say, oh, he'll need to move on to develop, but you can't argue that he's developing here. And that's what the point Jürgen was making. You know, if he was playing every week, would he be any better or worse? If he was playing every week somewhere else, would he be better or worse than he is now? And I think he is kicking on as a keeper all the time. You know, some of his saves the other night in that shootout, the third one in particular,
third one's outrageous. It's outrageous.
Unreal. And so he is developing here. He is growing here. And yeah, okay, you can make an argument of number of games, you know, you could get elsewhere, but, you know, what's the most important thing to you at the end of your career? Is it the experiences you've had, or is it like, you know, I don't see many ex-players going around banging on about appearance numbers. They're talking about trophies. He's won more trophies than Harry Kane. Do you know what I mean? And so, like, you can talk all you want about sort of, you know, playing every week and stuff like that. But, you know, he's not in a bad position to have some nice medals for the after-dinner circuit. He'd come to Cork with us.
Indeed. I mean, I'm going to the FSA Awards on Monday and I'm hopeful I'm going to win more trophies than Harry Kane, to be quite honest with you. You
can steal that joke if you want.
Yeah, you may well do. I'll see who's in the room and I'll judge accordingly. It's... The other thing about him, and I am distracted firstly by this talk of trophies, Mike, and also by the idea of us trying to bring about a state of affairs where Robbie's playing Hamlet, where I think there's...
Just join in, Andy. Andy wants to join in.
Andy, just come on, Ant. We're all in this together. I think there is, Mike, this little thing where, you know, the schedule, the manager says today it's intense when we get back, and he's right, but simultaneously... It's intense because there's the EFL Cup fourth round. You get through that. There's a fifth round game lined up and the home and away semi-final. That's all in January. There's third and fourth rounds of the FA Cup lined up as well. That's also in January. If Liverpool keep winning these games, my point here is that Kelleher's probably going to get more time in goal than Alisson between now and the 1st of February. And that is an opportunity for him to be able to showcase his talents, but not just him. Shimakas is in there. Ramsey's in there. Phillips is in there. Gomez, you think, will be in and out of the first team picture anyway. But that whole back five from that game we'll all get the opportunity to play, I think, a lot of football together if Liverpool keep getting results.
Yeah, I think so, and that's something that I think one of the beauties of this Liverpool squad for the last 4 or 5 years is that everyone's had their moments. So you can point to a point where even someone like Minamino last season, he had loads of moments in the League Cup, in the FA Cup run. Yeah. And I think that's the reason why the manager singles out Kelleher, is to make him feel special, because he appreciates the importance of the collective. And the importance, even as lads on the fringe of the squad, making when they have their moments, it's important to really pick them up and be like, no, look, you've had your moment. This is your moment in the sun. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of, like, you know, Gomez playing some of those games and kind of leading the side in the way he did on Wednesday. I thought was impressive. And just seeing more of those lads on the fringes who the manager singles out all the time in terms of how they train, in terms of how professional they are. Seeing them get minutes in the pitch will be exciting. And I'm looking forward to a cup run. I'm looking forward to some days out in Wembley in May and in the sunshine, singing Dua Lipa again. I can't wait.
I mean, genuinely, Mike, I'll just take the sunshine. You can put me wherever you want at the minute. We've hit that bit of autumn where it's relentlessly bleak.
Yeah, it's grim,
Andy's absolutely desperate to find out about Kelleher changing his gloves for the shootout. So if anyone can put Andy in touch with what's going on with Kelleher changing his gloves for the shootout, that'd be fabulous. See, this is a public service announcement / request. It's dead interesting. I mean, he did change his gloves.
I know. I saw that. They would have WhatsApped Andy, and I won't say what I said to him, but it's abusive.
Really?
Yeah.
There we are.
The first word's glove, and I heard something will leave.
Well, very good indeed. It'd be a dreadful situation if off the back of something you said in the podcast, Andy sued you for defamation. You'd be an odd one for the court. Were you producing this podcast? Well, yeah, we'll see where we end up. No, he did change his gloves. It is interesting. I would actually like to know why. If someone can let us know at some point. Last little bit on the Derby game before we take a little bit of a break, John. We bring in Dave, we bring in Augustine, and we loop back around. Is that Ben Doak was exciting. It doesn't need to be any more than that for now. I would actually quite like to see his name on the bench on Saturday. I suspect I'm not going to, but Ben Doak was exciting.
I'd 100% have him on the bench at the weekend with the attacking options we have at the moment. I got, you know, if we need a goal, you know, he's as good as option as any as we've got at the moment to come on and be direct. And if we're, let's fingers crossed, the option is we're 3-0 up, won't that be a laugh for 10 minutes? You know, remind me of the time, you know, when Raheem Sterling came on for his debut and just sort of, you know, lit the place up with his direct running and his confidence. You know, we could have a similar situation there on Saturday. I thought he was brilliant. I was watching it with Craig Hannon, and Craig Hannon was jumping up and down like a kid. He was like watching a footballer for the first time. He was sort of that good, really. And listen, I've watched him a bit of him this season, mainly in the European tournament that we've been doing. I watched him live at Rangers. I went to that in the afternoon before going to Ibrox, and I've seen the other ones on the telly, and he's done really well. But I thought he stepped up, and some players do. Some players look really good at youth level and then freeze a bit on the big stage. Others, if you're lucky, you know, replicate what they're good at, and then the very, very small amounts get even better. You know, something about the crowd, something about playing with better players, and something about, you know, just enjoying, you know, the limelight and the moments and stuff like that. He looks, it's early days, like you say, Neil, but he looks like one of those. And let's be clear, he's looked brilliant, you know, in the youth team so far at the moment. He's got an awful lot of goals and good play, but, you know, he looked to step up again. It's only Derby County and all that, Premier League defenders will be tougher, but yeah, it is so exciting. And considering, listen, I wouldn't be talking nothing, you know, jostle on the off the bench for him or anything like that, but with the injuries that we've got, you know, it's for the sake of having an attacking sub, I'd 100% have him on Saturday.
There we are. I mean, whisper it, he actually looked to me like Michael Owen, which I don't know, do you mean whisper it? Go on, Robbie.
One, a fella who a lad I coach is, I talked to his dad about him, and he said exactly the same thing about the Owen thing, because it's just his size and how direct he is. And yeah, he's fearless. He's absolutely fearless.
Yeah. And pace over 10 yards, pace from a standing start.
That's it. There was another comparison because of that, but I hear, but I won't say it because I don't, you know, by the kid. But he looks very exciting.
He's exciting, isn't he, Mike? He really is exciting.
He is. There's a fearlessness about him, which I really like. I think the best young players, the ones that you really think have a bit about them, have that fearlessness. I remember when Trent broke through, he had that same kind of, it's the look in their eyes, the way they play, the arrogance they play with. You can tell that there's something about the Soviet one player. So I was really encouraged by that cameo. Really, really encouraged.
Here we are, all hugely encouraged by it. Marvellous stuff indeed from Ben Doak and from Liverpool. In general, it's been a good week so far. Let's hope it continues to be a good week. If you listen to this as a podcast coming up, you've got Dave Hewitson on his new exhibition at the Walker Art Gallery. Well, not his, it's not like all his stuff, but he's curated it, he's pulled it all together. And it's called Art of the Terraces, and Agustí Malenga on his new series of children's football books called Never Give Up. Both of those things are to come as a podcast. But if instead you are enjoying this as Tour Live, then around now,
it's Beer 52 time. Beer 52 are back. Thanks to them for partnering with us again. And they are agreeing to send you a free case of beer. All you need to pay is £5.95 postage, and you can get a free case of 8 craft beers. The World Cup's coming up. Christmas is coming up, and the gifts are coming. You just need to go to beer52.com/wrap. So that's the number 52. So beer52, as in the number 52.com/wrap, and you can claim your free case of beer 52 beers, and they're really good. We've been partnering for a while. Neil subscribed off his own bat for quite a while as well, and yeah, absolutely love it. Each month they send their members a case of beer from a different part of the world, and showcasing the best independent breweries from across the globe. No better way to enjoy good beer during the World Cup and Christmas. And yeah, they've experienced beer so far. The members from 40 different countries spanning 5 different continents, from big juicy pale ales to delicious sumptuous stouts. You can try the best beers from across the world with the UK's number one beer club. Now, one thing I like about it as well is that you can tailor it a little bit. So if dark beer is not your thing, you can choose a light-only case. And also, you get the award-winning for Men Magazine. They've won an award, is right. Made up for you, lads and lasses. Brilliant stuff there for Men Magazine. Now award-winning, a bit like Rob's, or every show that Rob Gutman hosts on here. And a couple of tasty snacks they get thrown in as well. It is a subscription service, but you can pause or cancel at any time. So if you get it, you decide it's not for you, then that is fine. You can just either cancel it or pause it if you want to ever want to take a little bit of a break. But it is beer52.com/wrap. Get that beer on the way to yours. And it is John Gibbons for Tour Life. Delighted to be joined in the studio by an old friend, Dave Hewitson, who a fashion guru, a style icon, and now our curator of the Art of Terraces, which people may have seen is starting. Well, it started. Now you can go and see it now at the Walker Art Gallery, the fantastic Walker Art Gallery in Liverpool, and we'll be there for the next 4 to 5 months. So, Dave, thanks for coming in, first of all.
Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Art of Terraces, then, how did it come about?
Well, I think we go back 6 years, and there's 4 co-collaborators who together we approached the museum. Now, the guys that approached me was a guy called Jens from Germany, and 2 guys, Adam and Peter O'Toole from Huddersfield, who are illustrators and designers, got their own websites and everything like, and they had an idea about terrace culture, or not really terrace culture, but about football culture or whatever, trying to find an exhibition. I got brought in, and to be honest with you, go back 10 years before that, we were possibly almost going to have an exhibition in the same place in the Walker Art Gallery to do with casual culture, the trainers and the clothing and the fashion. That fell apart at one thing or another. So I thought, well, in the back of Paulie and the curator at the gallery, I thought at the back of her mind, you know, she might still be interested if we approach it in a different manner. So I says to these three co-collaborators, what about the art of the last 15, 20 years is taking inspiration from the 80s, the clothing, the shoes, the trainers, and it's getting used now for publicity reasons, for Adidas and, you know, and artists are using their inspiration from when they were kids and when they wanted the latest pair of trainers to produce art now as well. Like, so there's another legacy to it. So besides, obviously, the legacy of everyone walking around in training shoes nowadays, you've got that legacy of art being introduced. So when we approached the museum, and Pauline in particular, she was like, this sounds amazing, and this will draw in a new crowd to the Walker, which, you know, might be a bit elitist to some, but it's not. You know, it's art is for everyone. Get down there and you'll see that sitting next to a Rubens and a Rembrandt is 80s casuals, or Dave White, Pete McKee, these artists who are, you know, producing art, you know, inspired by that period.
So you get the thumbs up, which is great. How do you then go about sort of choosing what is to go in there? Because there is so much.
Oh, well, initially we had 6 to 7 artists and we had to produce a synopsis to, you know, take to the museum. Pauline, yeah, right, that's brilliant. We had Dave White, Pete McKee, Ross Muir, a few others on this like synopsis. We give that to Pauline. She approached their bosses. They liked the look of it. Then, as I say, 6 years in the making, over that period of time, we had to find artwork that we thought was suitable and would tie in with what our thoughts were about, you know, the 80s and the association with going to the match and, you know, the terraces and everything like that. So when you do have a look around the exhibition, it's not just paintings. There's a tapestry, there's collage, there's photography, there's video. So there's a cross section of everything that's, you know, artistic, an artistic manner that's, like, you know, being produced nowadays.
Can you date terrace culture? Can you say sort of when it sort of started? Because I guess it depends how far you want to go back, really.
Well, I, a lot of people in England will say, oh, it started there. But, you know, being from Liverpool, and obviously the Liverpool crowds going to Europe with Liverpool and bringing back trainers that weren't available in Liverpool before Wade Smith opened, you're talking like late 70s. So the late 70s, fashion was changing anyway. Punk had come in, everyone started wearing straight, narrow jeans. There wasn't a name for it, you know, it was just like Scally Kids or whatever, who were just only 16, 17, even younger possibly, and started wearing the latest fashion, which was just like straight, narrow jeans, a small collar shirt. And for some reason, people started wearing Adidas Samba, Mamba, Bamba trainers. And whether that was because you came home from school and your mum didn't want you ruining your shoes playing football in the streets, the kids started wearing them and then going to match in them. But before that period, no one wore trainer shoes or even sportswear on the streets.
Which is mad to think now, because everyone's doing it.
It's unbelievable, yeah. And within the space of, you know, 3 or 4 years, going up to about 1980, people were wearing the Stan Smith. There was a few with Forest Hills and that, which were available in the UK. But then someone turns up in a pair of Adidas strap-over tennis comfort, they were called. They were sort of a bit, wow, you know, where did you get your trainees from? You know, strap-overs, no one's seen them before. Strappers only started getting made in 1969, 70, something like that. You know, you're only talking about 8 or 9 years later, and someone turns up in Liverpool in a pair, and we find out they came from Germany. Someone had been to Germany, came home with them or whatever. So everyone was like, well, this is what we need next. But within the space of like a couple of months or whatever, a couple of shops, I think Whitty's was in Liverpool city centre, they got onto it. They got them in, and they got a Donnay pair as well that was strap over. So, you know, you needed these strap over trainers. But in the next, we played Bayern Munich in April 81. So before, from Christmas to, you know, April, everyone was thinking, I need to get a pair of trainers that no one else has got. You know, it's sort of like getting Munich in this draw meant, oh, yeah, let's go to Germany, let's get a pair of trainers. And that game, there probably was about, out of, you know, maybe 4,000 Liverpool fans who travelled, 2,000 were probably aged 16 to 18 or something.
Wow.
Came back with, like, you know, Trim Trab and a Grand Slam Grand Prix or whatever. And once the kids, like, Anfield became a bit of a fashion catwalk. You know, it's like, you know, the training shoes, and then the club air started filtering through, you know, different styles of jackets, and the sportswear started coming in the late 81, Fila and Tacchini and everything, like. And then, like we were saying, I think from there it started spreading when Liverpool fans were going to, you know, away games around England. You know, it didn't matter where you went, you stood out because of, you know, what you were wearing. And obviously, everyone else was still wearing flared jeans and, you know, mad scarves around their hands. And they're all, like, wondering why no one's wearing any scarves and, you know, straight jeans and, you know, Fila and Tacchini and Adidas trainers and everything, like. So, yeah, you know, that's how it developed. If you don't mind me carrying on talking.
Go on.
By the mid, you know, 80s, everyone sort of dressed similar. And then what you also had was a few sports shops opened. So Wade Smith's opened, you know, coincidentally, 40 years ago this week, opened on Slater Street. His idea was go to Germany in a van, bring back a load of training shoes that, you know, Trim Trab that you couldn't get here. And he was selling out within days, going backwards and forwards, and then he was making contacts and bringing more trainers in. And it became this iconic store that people travelled from far and wide to come and visit and, you know, get a pair of Adidas trainers. So as I say about the culture travelling, people were travelling to Liverpool to get training shoes to take back to Sheffield or Scotland or whatever that they couldn't get in their own town. And, you know, once they were doing that, all the kids in them cities were after something similar. So besides Wade Smith opening up, over the next 3-4 years, obviously other people had the same idea, you know, I'll open a sports shop. So when you look at the late 70s, there was probably 3, 4, 5 sports shops in the whole of Liverpool. You walk down one street now in Liverpool, you can buy training shoes in probably 10 shops.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's how the culture, that's the legacy of that culture. And another thing that I think is, could be associated with it, but, you know, people might argue against it, is the fact that by the late 80s, you had, like, Prada, Hugo Boss, some of these top brands who were just producing shoes and suits and shirts and ties, looking, thinking, we're not selling many shoes here. Everyone's walking around in training shoes. Prada Sport, they start up, Hugo Boss Sport. So they had a sideline of, like, sportswear, and a separate sports brand to the high-end stuff that they were selling. And they started making their own training shoes. So that's what I think is another legacy of it. And then as the years go by, obviously, you know, fashions change and whatever, but it's still very relevant today. You know, the clothing keeps coming back. JD keeps producing the old training shoes from the 80s. And this exhibition looks at that, but as I say about the artwork, that is something quite new. I see it as a bit of a pop art that, you know, wasn't there 15, 20 years ago. But now when you look at some of the styles that are being used and some of the stuff in the exhibition, it does look like pop art. So, you know, pop art's been around and it was throwaway stuff, you know, Andy Warhol, Brillo pad boxes or whatever and other stuff that he'd done. But, you know, no one has really put a training shoe on a canvas and put it out there as a piece of art. You know, training shoes, used to throw them away. Now they've become a piece of art, a training shoe. There's training shoes in the exhibition. They're actually a piece of art that, you know, people can go and reminisce about, or they can probably still try and buy them nowadays. Like,
yeah, it's... I know Scots have got in both Scots Menswear and Tessuti, and when I was speaking to them about why it was interesting hearing them talk about how, you know, fashion's obviously influenced football culture, but also the other way around. And they were talking about, you know, getting, you know, sort of influence from what people were wearing the match and stuff like that. Was quite interesting. It almost becomes sort of cyclical, doesn't it?
Well, it is, yeah. And, you know, obviously Tessuti, Scots Menswear, selling stuff that is relevant now to kids today who want to walk around in a pair of Adidas trainers, but with maybe an old face jacket or whatever. But, you know, that, like I say, it's quite relevant that the styles haven't really gone away. You know, that fashion, you know, Lacoste, you know, I'm wearing the Pringle jumper that was like only brought out recently with the old logo on and the old typeface again. You know, they're still looking at the back catalogue and thinking, yeah, people are still buying this stuff. It's quite amazing that, like, you know, some 40 years later, people are still wearing the same labels and everything. You go back 40 years from the 70s when we started doing it, you're talking like the 30s and 40s, and you're not going to still walk around in a suit and a flat cap iron or anything like. So it's still amazing that it's still happening.
It's still happening, and yeah. I like to think that Liverpool is still leading, but maybe I am biased there on that. But
well, the kids in Liverpool have got their own take on it as well. Yeah. You know, the kids will wear what they want to wear. But, you know, it's a cross-section. Liverpool's always had its own style. Hmm. We don't, like, look and go, oh, right, well, London wearing, let's wear that as well. Like, and, you know, good on them, you know, young lads wearing whatever they want to wear. You know, they're not being influenced by us older people or, you know, maybe Scots or to suit the eye. They'll pick a label, they'll wear it. That'll, you know, transmit across, you know, a wider spectrum of younger lads, and then next minute their fashion will change and everything as well, like.
Yeah, it all carries on. Listen, Art of the Terraces is on at the Walk of Art Gallery from the 5th of November to the 12th of March. And so if you are in Merseyside, if you're lucky enough to live in this wonderful place, you can go and see it whenever you like. But if you do travel in from different places, you know, you're coming in, maybe Southampton at home, you're looking for something to do the morning of the game, and, you know, keep it out the pub and stuff like that, I would strongly recommend that people go down to that.
Just going to say the same thing, John. The Walker Art Gallery is 200 yards from Limestone Station,
yeah.
So you're going to get a lot of fans coming to, you know, Everton are playing Leicester tomorrow, 200 yards away. It's free as well. You can, you know, make a little donation on the way out or wherever if you think it's good. If you think it's bad, you can't pinch the money that's there. but it's, like I say, it's free. It's 200 yards from Limestone. Anyone coming up to Liverpool for the weekend or for a match, you know, an hour out of your time, and, you know, it'll influence artists. You know, you're going to get artists there, you're going to get young kids getting taken there by the parents, yeah, who were like around in the 80s, or those who were into the fashion, those who were into the football. There is actually something for everyone. But like I say, go there, check it out, and, you know, you'll have a good hour or two and enjoy it.
Absolutely. I've not been up yet. I'm really looking forward to getting up. But as I say, Art of the Terraces is on to the 12th of March. So hopefully most of you will find yourself in Liverpool, at least a little bit between now and then, you're able to go to it. Just before we go, I mentioned, give a shout out to the label, Dave. People often ask me what I'm wearing on Talking Reds, and where's that top from and stuff like that. And it's normally one of yours.
Well, 80scasuals.co.uk. And John does actually buy the stuff as well.
Yeah. Every now and again, Dave will send me something, but I do normally put my hand in my pocket.
Yeah, we've been going for like 20 years next year as well. Like, so it's and then we do also a few albums, so the Away Days album and stuff like that. So we do LPs. So we are stuck in the 80s, actually. Like, but yeah, it's big influence on me and many other people.
Absolutely, Dave. Thanks so much for coming in, and best of luck with it.
Thanks for that, John.
And it is John Gibbons for Tour Live, and joined now by an old friend, Augustine Malenga, who came on a few weeks ago to talk about his children's books and his children's books related to Liverpool Football Club. And I'm pleased to know that such is the success of those, we now have more. So first of all, Augustine, thanks a lot for coming back on the Anfield Wrap.
Yeah, thanks so much, John. Happy to be here.
So tell us about Never Give Up, the miracle game, this idea of you've had of looking, you know, at more of these fabulous tales that the football football throws at us.
Yeah. Okay, like I said last time, when I released Never Give Up, my son and I are huge Liverpool fans. So we were in the kitchen and we were just talking about the Never Give Up book. And then I asked him what his favorite moment was, because he's kind of young. He's 13. And he said the Alisson goal was his best moment. And I said, you know what? Why don't we just add that to the Never Give Up series? Because that's what Liverpool Football Club is all about. We never do things the easy way.
And, yeah.
We've got so many tales to tell. I mean, I remember the Owen final, FA Cup final, and the Gerrard FA Cup final. And yeah, so I decided to add those to the series. The latest one is based on the Istanbul, the miracle game. And I'll just continue churning them out, both for the people, the Liverpool fans out there to enjoy, but I also enjoy writing them because it makes helps me to relive all those moments, especially with the season we're having now.
No, well, absolutely, you know, good memories and memories from the past, you know, fantastic to relive where we are struggling, but also I guess reminders to all of us, not just children, but like you say, to people like me and you, that, you know, we've had, you know, 2004-05 wasn't looking like it was going to be the best season at one point, and then it ends in glory, so maybe that can happen as well.
Yeah, always.
We talked a little bit about it last time, but just the sort of the title Never Give Up and the message that gives the young people is quite a powerful one, isn't it? Because there's lots that we can learn from football. I think the idea of working together and the idea of being stronger together than we are individually, I think is a positive message from sport generally, but also, you know, looking at our football team and teaching our children. I've got two young children. Obviously, you were talking there about you know, football conversations with your boy, the idea of you know, pointing to examples of their sporting heroes and saying, well look what resilience can give you.
Exactly. Yeah. Based on that, the final book in the series, like you're saying, it is all about Liverpool, but I think I mentioned last time that I was born in Zambia, born and raised, spent half my life there and half my life I've spent in South Africa. But the whole Zambia national team perished, and no one gave us a chance because the team had to be built up quickly because the African Nations Cup was in a couple of months' time. So they just had to grab players from different clubs and put them all together. But that team actually reached the final. Lost, unfortunately, but years later, the final was in Gabon where those people perished, and we ended up winning that final. And just the thing about bringing people together, and like we're saying, the resilience, and nobody gave Zambia a chance. I mean, we played Cote d'Ivoire in the final with Drogba and the Touré brothers. But yeah, we ended up winning that final on penalties. And that was also about never giving up, and reminded me, just like we said about Liverpool Football Club, on the other side, the Zambia national team did exactly the same. So it's both for young and old alike, just to never give up and keep on striving.
Yeah, the Zambia story is such an inspirational one, and one that people will know maybe a little bit about, but I'm keen to find out more. I mean, how did they do it? Because like you say, they lost an entire team, and you know, and then to rebuild again and even to compete in the African Nations with a new team was an incredible thing. But to compete so well and then to go on a couple of years later and win it, you know, how did they do it?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's never giving up, I guess.
It's certainly team spirit. It's certainly something. Is this something that you want to continue with? You know, you mentioned there that, you know, you get an inspiration from the young people in your life and things like that. And a Liverpool Football Club never do things the easy way. So maybe there'll be, at the end of this season, a few more additions, who knows?
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, so far there's six in total now in the series. And as we go along, and as I discuss with my son, we'll hopefully get it to 10, maybe even 20, because we've got so many tales to tell. I mean, I would like to also speak to the older generation, you know, because like I said, I started supporting when I was about 8 or 10 years old. So that was in the 80s. But I'm quite sure that there must be other stories from the 70s and the 60s. So I'd like to cater for the older generation as well. So I think that's something I'd like to look at too. But I'd have to find someone who I'd have to discuss that with. That'll be my next...
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to give some Augustine some of your inspiration, you can get in touch with him on Twitter. He's Malenga_A on Twitter. He's also got a website with all his books on, which is kamulenga.com/books.html. You can go on there. Also, he's given away 5 copies of the book for subscribing to his newsletter. So make sure you subscribe to the newsletter. But do check out all the books that are on the website. We'll include a link in the show to all those, because, you know, it isn't just football. We say, I mean, a little look on your website, you know, shows a lot of stuff about animals and stuff like that. But the fabulous colour, I don't know who your illustrator is, Augustine, but it's, you know, the colour that hits you when you go on your website is fantastic.
Thanks. I've got a great group who helped me out. So yeah, all props to them. They're called Boutique Books. And yeah, you can also check their website out, and you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, so kamulenga.com if you want to sort of check out all those. As I say, we'll include a link in our show blurb as well. Or if you're struggling to find it, just give me a shout on Twitter, or give Augustine a shout on Twitter, because as I say, he's at mulenga_a. That's mulenga_a on Twitter as well. But Augustine, great to chat to you again. Thanks very much.
Thanks, John. Cheers, eh?
We find ourselves back. It is Ben Doak's birthday today, as Andy Heaton's just said to me. We are back with Robbie O'Neill, with Mike Bancole, and with John Gibbons in order to look ahead to this game against Southampton. It's such an odd game for them, Mike. I think I expected Hasenhüttl to get the bullet in 3 days' time, frankly. You know, I thought that it was going to be a real classic. Hang on to the World Cup. I think a couple might go next week. I thought he'd go Monday, Tuesday next week. I think it's really difficult. I would expect, you know, if this was a normal sort of season scenario, I'd sort of imagine there might be a bit of a new manager bounce. But Southampton are a side who don't play that many midweek games. They've just had a midweek game that the new manager wasn't any part of. He watched from the stands. They went through on penalties against Sheffield Wednesday. There's this one, and then there's nothing for ages. And as I say, it's such a unique, odd little situation, Mike. All the obvious sort of cliches that you might say, I don't know if they apply, to be quite honest with you. I don't know quite what applies at this stage of this one.
Yeah, it's a really weird one. I was trying to find parallels to things that might have happened in the past in terms of management, like the timing of a sacking, of a replacement kind of coming in, and there's a quick break after that. I can't think of any. I mean, Brighton, we did play them after they just replaced Potter, but again, feels different because he had the international break to work with them, I think. So this is really weird. What I would say on Hasenhüttl is, I have a good mate who's a Saints fan. I just think it felt like it was time for him to go.
I was expecting it next week, Mike. I really was. I was thinking they'll just get through this little run now. This will be it. Then it's the part of the ways. I would genuinely, this slightly odd time into the bit. I honestly thought Jones was going to go somewhere else. I just thought they'd give it 7 more days, to be honest.
I think what's done for Hasenhüttl is the way in which he lost to Newcastle. It just felt... Yeah. They felt emphatic, and I just think they've been on the back end of too many emphatic defeats, to put it mildly, for Hasenhüttl. So I think it was his time to go. But it's just going to be a really weird game. Like, the managers had not much time to work with him. And I think Jürgen was talking about how he's had to watch some Luton clips and also some Southampton clips, because he literally has no idea what to expect on Saturday. So it's going to be a weird game. And I think the manager emphasises it in his press conference. We have to focus on ourselves. We have to focus on our game. And that's going to be the important thing. But I don't really sense a new manager bounce. I mean, how can you have a new manager bounce when the manager's had about 2 training sessions? It just feels bizarre. So
And doesn't know really when his next one is, because presumably they're going to take some time off as well. I mean, exactly. You know what I mean?
So I assume a new manager bounce for them is the 6 weeks they're going to have off, and then they come back after the World Cup.
Didn't really feel to me as well like the players weren't playing for them. Do you know what I mean? You weren't watching Southampton and thinking, oh, they've got a really good team here, but you know, they've down tools or whatever. I think they have got some good players, and I think, you know, if we're not at it and not careful, you know, they could cause us some problems. But at the same time, you know, just totally using the bounce analogy, you know, they're going to be keen to impress him. You know, don't get me wrong, there's that, but I don't think you're going to see something. Like, you know, we saw Aston Villa, for example, when suddenly the 3-0 up after 15 minutes and I was like, aye. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't feel like that kind of scenario to me at all. You know, I'm not saying I disagree, you know, with the sacking, it's up to them what they do. But, you know, for me, you know, when I've seen them this season, they've looked a tidy side, a little bit inexperienced, you know, a developing football team, really. And I think we'll probably see that on Saturday.
The young Robbie, you know, the one of the youngest sides in the division in terms of average age, and that to me is part of what sort of got them to this pass in the season, that it's just all a little bit tricky. You know, there's an inexperienced thing there. Again, I can't quite work that out in the context of a bounce. The new manager, you know, whether he does a good job or not, one of the things he's reputed for is A, coaching, and B, coaching young players. So I expect over a period of time, he's going to find his way through with them. I just don't quite see he comes in and solves six tactical problems or anything like that, or even that those players themselves are experienced enough to solve six tactical problems along with him, even if he did have the right answers.
Yeah, it looks to me as though it's an appointment where they're looking at it that the players are going to grow with him. You know what I mean? So as the players develop, he'll develop. Like, I know because that's the second spell at Luton, isn't it?
Yeah.
The initial spell at Luton went really well. They go to Stoke, nearly takes them down, and then ends up back at Luton. And he's done great again with a young team. So I think with Southampton, that's just kind of looking at the bigger picture here. It's a case of making sure that over the next 6 months, these young players can get used to this manager, he can get used to them, and where they end up, he ends up. I think the reason they've sacked him is I think they were probably thinking, well, they're going to go into that Liverpool game and we're on adding to nothing anyway.
Yeah.
Risk that manager bounce. Do you know what I mean? There is a game where we can risk it. So, in a way, even if they do get it hammering, it's a chase and an experience for them, and he can pull them together and he can say to them, well, you know what? Everyone was expecting that today, but it doesn't get any worse than this.
Yeah, that doesn't happen again.
That's it. I mean, and there will be players there that have had that were involved in those 9-0s, and they can reinforce that. Do you know what I mean? So I think if anything, it's quite a clever time to appoint him. How it will fare, Lord knows, because I think in this league, you know, it can go one of two ways. Like when Crystal Palace appointed Vieira, and then started like signing all like young players in the Championship and stuff like that, there was a few eyebrows raised, but fortunately for them, things seem to have turned out quite well. Brighton the same, you know. Whereas I just suppose, like with Southampton, a lot of their better young players are out long term injured. Like Livermento's out for the rest of the season, and you know he's so promising for them.
Yeah.
So I don't. It is the rest of the season he's out, isn't it?
He might. It's unclear on him. He's been out for a year.
Yeah, is it a year out now?
It's almost a year now. But there's the World Cup in, and I don't think he's back doing any form of training even now. It's such a bad injury to such a promising
He did his entire knee, didn't he? So it's one of them. I just think in the long term, it's a case of the group, if you like, are in it together, manager and players, and the club will just allow them to crack on. So I think this game has gone, you know, it's a no lose for them in a way.
There's a picks of a team scenario, Mike, but I don't know how complicated it is. I'll frame the question this way. How many changes are you expecting from the side that started against Tottenham?
I'm not expecting any changes from the side that started against Tottenham, to be honest with you. I wouldn't see why you would change that team. I think it's a team that looked good on the day, and especially in that first 30 minutes of the first half. And I think for us, it is about building on that first half performance and actually sustaining the first half performance for longer than that kind of really good 30-minute spell, and actually trying to play like that for an extended period of a game. Because I think the challenge for us has been, in a lot of games this season, some of the ones we've won, we've played well, but only in phases. We've not been able to sustain the levels of performance for a long time. That's why all these stats about us being at rumble with all of our opponents, I think the problem I've had with the Liverpool team is they look like physically a bit off it. And I'd love them to kind of sustain the kind of intensity we saw against Spurs in that first 30 minutes for a longer period of this game. And if they do that, I'm confident they're going to win the game, because I think they would have too much for any version of Southampton tomorrow. So the challenge for us is that same 11, they've had a rest, a lot of them, over the last week. Go again, get a result against Southampton, and off you go to the World Cup. If you're going, if you're not, go to the bye and have a good time on the intense pre-season break, as the manager's calling it.
You expecting any changes from the Tottenham game?
He might do Curtis Jones. So he leaves Curtis Jones out completely on Wednesday. I don't know if there's been any talk about that.
He didn't mention Jones's name at all in the press conference, but he listed lads who were injured or have been injured. So he just mentioned Jones.
Yeah, so I mean, he might have had a slight thing where they think sort of don't risk him. But if he wasn't going to play on at the weekend, or he didn't have, you know, a strong chance, it would have been surely worth getting him a game. So We were talking a little bit. We did the pre-match warm-up yesterday with Ian hosting, and he was asking about where we had a bit of a chat about Nunes on the left, and I was saying how playing left-hand side away at somewhere like Tottenham is completely different to home against Southampton, and the different sort of challenges, really. He's going to have less space, you know, less pitch sort of in front of him, really. It felt like he had the run of the ground, you know, last week, where it's going to be completely different sort of defensive setup. I don't know whether... So, and I've been thinking about it ever since, really, and I don't know whether we might be better off trying to get him in the middle and then thinking, well, if you've got Nunes middle... Salah right, but coming in and cutting in, then Curtis Jones doing a really sensible left forward performance like he did against Napoli, like might be no bad thing, really, especially if you've got Elliot there in the middle. So I think he might be tempted to do that, but that's the only change I can imagine. It doesn't look like Henderson's going to start pre-World Cup to me.
Robbie, you expecting anything different to Tottenham? Think John might be right about Jones?
Yeah, I think John's right about Jones. I think that's something I'd expect to see at some point, at least. I just think as well, like, it'll be a change in personnel, but I think he'll just be trying to, like, hammer it into them. Do not take these for granted. You know what I mean? Do not take these lightly. Don't have a Leeds mark too. Like, we should be turning these over on Saturday, and it's just been the case with us too often this season that we'll have a really impressive result against one of the top six, and then we'll turn it around in the next game. They were clearly expected to win, and we don't. So, as you know, we just don't give them any sucker. I mean, Southampton, for instance, like they're not like blessed in attacking areas. For instance, you know what I mean? They haven't got. I don't think they've got a striker, have they?
Well, they'll play Che Adams, Robbie. But I was about to say the reason why I think, you know, the don't give him an inch stuff will really help. They might start Arabo up front, and when I've caught him this season, I think he's been quite impressive, don't get me wrong. But I can see a situation where we just have such an attitude with Van Dijk and Konate that it's 2v2 there, and you just push and push and push and push, and you just end up almost playing the entire match in their final third, because they'll come so far with them to push them all the way back. And because they don't carry that threat, you know, as a front two, they haven't got a pair that carries that threat to whoever they pick. And I just think that's why I think there could be a really strong Liverpool. Just don't let them out and don't let them breathe here for a period.
There was a moment in the Spurs game, I think, where it was patently obvious that they were doing exactly the same thing to Harry Kane, where they were just driving him further up the pitch. I think Konate literally chased them at one point.
Yeah. Almost onto the edge of his own defensive team. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, and I think maybe that is the change that they're trying to like really implement. Yeah, that they say to them, just be aggressive, Don't be worrying as much about the eye line as we normally do. Although we're going to still implement it, just be a bit more aggressive on the front foot and put pressure on them in other ways. So I think it'll be more of an attitude change than I do a personnel one. Personally,
Are we all expecting 3 points, Mike?
I am. Yeah. I don't see why we wouldn't win this game. I just think the players are rested. Let's try and just win two games in a row and really go into this World Cup break rejuvenated almost. I think I haven't conceived the world in which we lose tomorrow, just because it would be the worst possible way to go into the World Cup having lost this game. Like, it just would leave everyone feeling quite low, I think, especially given we lost those two games in a row before. The Spurs game would feel like another fourth dawn. So we really need to win this game, and I haven't conceded the possibility of us not winning it. So we are going to win it.
That's the spirit. Robbie, you're increasingly being lit like in a Beckettian theatre production rather than Hamlet, as this is war on, the light dwindling on Robbie in the back. But the light isn't going to dwindle on Liverpool, is it?
Absolutely not, no. I am cautiously optimistic that if you can be, that we're going to win 3-0.
Nicely poetic there from me, I felt, by the way.
Me and Mike have got no idea what you two were on about.
Don't worry at all. We're all happy.
Me and Mike just came to talk about the match.
All over the place.
Talk about Shakespeare. What's going on?
I've always got the beret on. Liverpool going to get all 3 points, John?
Yeah, I think we will. I think we'll do.
Excellent stuff. From the left bank of the Mersey, it's Neil Atkinson and Robbie O'Neill and Mike Bankall and John Gibbons. It has been so live. I hope you've enjoyed it. Everything you're up to. The last one where there are games, trust me, we've got stuff coming all the way through the World Cup. Some of the stuff's going to be absolutely electrifying. You'd expect nothing less from the Anfield Wrap. Take it easy. Sports Social Podcast Network.